to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Happy Friday. Welcome back to another episode. Today, I talk with Tim Overland, who's Executive Director with Personhood Iowa, as well as State Representative Skylar Wheeler, and both came on the podcast to discuss the second funnel week in the Iowa legislature. But before we get to any of that, first, a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And we're back. I had a conversation yesterday afternoon with Tim Overland, who is Executive Director of Personhood Iowa. He and I discussed Funnel Week and Personhood Iowa's legislative priorities this year.
Tim, welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Shane. I really appreciate it.
Hey, very welcome. So what has been going on with you and Personhood Iowa this legislative session?
Well, as part of the coalition, we've been backing a constitutional amendment. I know I'm sure you talk about, and I'm sure your listeners know about the rogue Supreme Court that we have in Iowa that has decided they, they continue to make up laws and amend the Constitution just by fiat, which they did last year during the 72-hour decision on abortion that came out of the 20-week bill from a couple of years ago. Right. And they just they determined that the Iowa Constitution says that there's a constitutionally protected fundamental right to an abortion.
And can I stop you for a second? You know where that's at? Because I read the Iowa Constitution. And I was like, I don't remember seeing that in there.
Well, and they somehow found it in the right to protect your life and liberty somehow. And the interesting thing is what people don't know is when many of those very same guys that actually wrote the Iowa Constitution, a few months, not even years, we're talking about. So the same men, within just a few months, were writing many of the abortion laws that protected all life from the moment of conception until, till past birth, just within a few months. They were on the books until 1973. So.
Right.
They didn't have it in there either.
it was either Justice Mansfield or Waterman. I can't remember which that mentioned that in their dissent for that decision. I remember reading that. I thought that's interesting. So
really, what the Coalition of Pro-Life Leaders, one of the things that we are doing, kind of at the guidance, Martin Cannon, who's with the Thomas More Society, who actually defended the heartbeat legislation or heartbeat law, I guess, after governor signed it and after they were sued. They've determined that we need to put the judiciary back in its box. And so one of the ways that we want to do that is to pass a constitutional amendment that says that, and this is modeled after a constitutional amendment that has passed muster in Tennessee, and I want to say for West Virginia, maybe. And they did a lot of work on it. I think Tennessee's took like 12 years to go through the whole process. But it's just basically two sentences, or maybe a sentence with a comma, that says there is no right to an abortion nor guaranteed funding in the Iowa Constitution. So, it's what's kind of referred to as sort of a neutral constitutional amendment. It doesn't prohibit abortions. It won't stop an abortion. It just says that no Iowa Supreme Court, there is no right to an abortion in the Iowa Constitution.
Right. It basically removes, you know, say the fetal heartbeat bill, then I guess what would happen, I wonder, with the fetal heartbeat bill, it currently was struck down by, or a district judge ruled against it, and then they didn't end up appealing it because it's like, why bother after the 72-hour waiting period ruling? I mean, we know how they're going to rule.
Sure, and I have other thoughts on some of the things that we can do in addition. While I think that this constitutional amendment is very important, I don't know that it gets to the core, you know, or the root of the problem. But not being a lawyer, but talking to these guys, I think part of what would need to happen is that, you know, they would have to, you know, somehow figure out a way to re-adjudicate it. I don't know what happens, you know, with these type of bills, you know, once a judge rules on it.
Well, or I guess, you know, if the constitutional amendment passed, it would just be maybe a matter of repassing it then.
Yeah, probably.
Go ahead.
Oh,
I'm just thinking, you know, if they did that with the potential, you know, with the constitutional amendment, the Supreme Court really, I mean, I don't see how they could touch it. They might try to touch it. I'm hoping the makeup of the court is better at that by that point in time. But, I, you know, who knows? It's a crapshoot with the judicial nominating process we have here in Iowa.
So, well, and I guess, you know, as I said a minute ago, I don't know that this gets to the core of the problem. The thing that drives me the most crazy, and especially amongst, you know, conservatives, is that we really care what the judges say. I mean, we've really allowed them to operate under this precedent model and, you know, not stand up. I started as soon as Justice Huppert made it what I call this cowardly decision on the 72-hour law, I immediately started calling for, you know, Emancipation Proclamation for the unborn. And while that may not be the perfect analogy, you know, I don't know that it's that far off. I think it paints the picture of what we need to do. And that's something, you know, along the lines of a governor standing up and saying, you know, just as Dred Scott was an evil act by the court in saying that it was okay to own people, that Roe v. Wade, the decisions coming out of the Iowa Supreme Court, or, you know, fill in your state Supreme Court, those decisions are just as evil. And we can't say we own people, and we can't say it's okay to kill people. And so that's really what the core is. And until we can put these guys back in their box, why even do anything?
Certainly Governor Reynolds could, you know, issue a proclamation like that, but I don't think it has any legal, it doesn't have the same force of law. I think it'd be better for the legislature to repass with a rebuke to the Iowa Supreme Court.
Sure. I get, you know, that, you know, some folks say you'd go into a constitutional crisis. I would say we're already in a constitutional crisis.
That's true.
Even some of, you know, the folks that I work with on a national level in the personhood movement have said that, you know, if Governor Reynolds stood up and started blockading abortion clinics and say, no, we're not going to kill any more babies in Iowa, you know, the legal system and the political system would try to do everything they could to crush her. So that's the case. You know, we're looking at doing some different things maybe to slowly start stepping that up and getting to that. You know, it's not a word I use a lot, but incrementally moving that direction to putting us into a position of being able for some some executive in the future to do something like that.
It would be interesting to see. You're right. There is a mindset, and it is hard to overcome, especially since all the way back the, you know, the 19th century with Marbury v. Madison ruling by the Supreme Court that elevated judicial review. And
and funny you say that, Shane. Actually, I just sat down with some guys here in the last couple of months talking about some nullification or 10th Amendment philosophies, and one of those is they actually, and actually I think it just popped up in social media the other day where somebody quoted Marbury versus Madison, and it really wasn't to do what it's now been held up to do. It really wasn't.
It was
just kind of what happened.
It was telling Congress they couldn't add to the original jurisdiction of the Supreme Court, which I think was appropriate. It's like, no, the Constitution's pretty clear what's our original jurisdiction and what's appellate jurisdiction. You can't just tell us by law. You have to literally amend the Constitution to be able to do that with the Supreme Court. So, you know, you're right. It's been reinterpreted, and you got case law on top of that, and it's just legal doctrine anymore.
It's what's being taught in all the law schools now. You know, we've gone away from, the natural law and some of the things that our founders founded our country on to, you know, basically survival of the fittest and, you know, living, breathing, evolving law and all this kind of stuff. And this precedent stuff's just awful. But, you know, one of the things that I actually asked, as we were working on this, as we're working on this constitutional amendment, as we're working on legislation, as I just said, if we don't put the emphasis back in our box, then we can just all pack up and, you know, go home. But we have some avenues that I think would be ways to challenge, to push back on them. We actually had personhood legislation that was introduced by Senator Feenstra, although he didn't get any co-sponsors, which was interesting. So you can, if you know the political landscape in Iowa, you can, you know, place some your cynical opinion on that if you'd like. But one of the things that actually is in the Iowa Constitution says that the legislature can limit their jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. And while it has never been tried in Iowa, it's there. And, you know, we have people saying, well, we need to put something in the Constitution to put them back in their box. What I'm saying is there's something already in the Constitution. Let's do that.
Right. So, I've been saying that for years.
And we've tried doing that in some of our personhood legislation in the past.
Right. I've seen bills like that. Maybe not necessarily yours, but I've seen other bills where they've tried to slip that in and it didn't go anywhere.
It's because these lawyers just kind of look at you and blink like, well, what do you mean? Well, it's right there, and you can read it very clearly in the Iowa Constitution that it can be done. And that's some of the questions, you know, and I'm one of my favorite guys down under the Gold Dome is Senator Chapman, you know, and he's been leading the fight on a lot of really good stuff. And one of those is the constitutional amendment. And I just asked him and I asked, you know, other legal folks down there, at the Capitol, I said, what are you going to do if the Supreme Court rules that your constitutional amendment is unconstitutional? And they just kind of look at me like, are you crazy? They can't do that because it's in the Constitution. So there's a lot of things that they aren't supposed to be able to do. We can't seem to tell them no.
Yeah,
so, I guess my question is, when are we going to stand up to these guys?
Well, in my opinion, and whether they would do it or not, I don't know. But if the Supreme Court had exercised that much hubris to declare a constitutional amendment unconstitutional, that's grounds for impeachment, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. And I believe we passed that a long time ago. The interesting thing was the very next week is that they now determine that we get to pay for transgender surgery, you know, with our tax dollars. So, yes. I mean, again, when are these guys going to stop? Or, better yet, one of the adults in the room going to correct them and tell them no.
Right. Yeah. I don't even understand their basis for that ruling because it's a freaking elective surgery. It's not like it's medically necessary. If it were something that was medically necessary, I could kind of see it, but it's not.
Well,
So
when that ruling came down, I believe I was in Cleveland at a normal, pro-personhood, pro-life event that I go to every spring. And we were sitting, it's pro-life, it's pro-family, it's, you know, it's a lot of different things. It's 2 days, a lot of speakers. We had somebody talking about the topic of transgenderism. And the analogy they made, I haven't heard this made before, and I thought it was awesome. Basically, he said, what we're doing is we're feeding into people's mental issues in the same way you wouldn't prescribe a liposuction to somebody with, you know, that's bulimic or, right. You know, that has eating disorder, an eating disorder, why in the world would you perform surgery on somebody who obviously needs help? It was right. a great analogy, and I was like, never really thought about that. But now we can't say that that's a mental problem.
And especially when you consider surgery like that, that's irreversible.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you go down that road, it's for keeps. I mean, you can't take it back after that.
And last year at that same event, we had somebody who had gone down that road and saw the destruction it did to his life and then tried to go back and you know, is now living as a man again, but talked about all the mental torture he had as a child and what happened that pushed him to the point to start getting, you know, some of the surgeries and stuff. And
right. It's crazy. You know, and then you got, of course, I know this is a little bit out of your wheelhouse since it's federal and it's not the life issue, but you got the whole Equality Act where House Democrats are trying to codify sexual orientation and gender identity as a protected class. We already have that in Iowa in our Civil Rights Act, but
right.
You know, it's mind blowing to me, especially with gender identity in particular, because first of all, transgender, that's a political term, you know, not a medical
right.
one. Medical one is
right.
gender dysphoria.
Dysphoria. Sure.
And I told a liberal and I were debating this on social media a couple of days ago. I said, tell you what, hey, let's just take everybody, every mental illness, any mental disorder listed in DSM-5, and let's turn all those people into special class then.
Right.
Class. I mean,
right.
if you're gonna do it to transgender folks, why, you know, or those with gender dysphoria, why discriminate against people with schizophrenia?
To your point, Shane, this is all connected. This all goes back to some judge somewhere determining that this is what is right, because a lot of this stuff doesn't find its way in, you know, by at the ballot box. This is stuff that happens through judges and through fiat. And you know, I said again, trying to make my point after this decision by Huppert was, why don't we just turn the Capitol into a big museum, send the governor and the legislature home, and let these nine or seven, whatever we have, and I guess it's seven, folks across the street here in Des Moines, just let them set all the rules. We got all the bureaucracy in the way. They can set the rules, make the laws, and then the bureaucracy can implement it. I can save us a bunch of money. So, you know, whether it's, you know, this type of stuff, whether it's, you know, the life issue, the marriage issue, there's so many things that we just in the legislature, we go to court.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, speaking of the Life Amendment, that's hit the second funnel, didn't it?
It did not. It stopped at the second funnel, as did a lot of other things.
Yeah.
It did not make it through the funnel. And so that's another problem. Is that we have a party that that I've started calling the party and capitalizing it,
right.
And that, you know, is putting its own survival ahead of common sense, ahead of protecting babies and their mothers, you know, punishing the wicked. I just don't get it. You know, from what I can tell, we've had the trifecta now for, what is this now, 4 years?
Right.
I'm gonna do my math, or more. And, it's, you know, we can't get things like, we get resistance to things like, let's not sell fetal body parts. It finally went through, but it was all you could do to get, you know, the Iowa House to even bring it up for debate, let alone get it passed. And now, just the other day, we have something that isn't an anti-abortion bill by any stretch. I think it's could be called
the
pro-life
fatal homicide.
Because yes, that it could be called pro-life only in that it, you know, that it reminds us of the dignity and value of human life.
Right.
But even New York has a bill like this on the books. I mean, we're one of 12 states that doesn't make it a Class A felony if you perpetrate a crime against a woman who's pregnant and cause the injury or death of her child, that it's also a Class A felony. And because the language was changed, at least that's the excuse they're using, the rumblings I'm hearing is they do not want to have any sort of debate that's a life that could be considered pro-life or any of that in the Iowa House.
Oh, man, that's frustrating. Now, I know State Representative Stephen Holt, who's the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, he seems to be committed to take up this bill next session. In his defense, he did get it late. They did get it through a subcommittee, but, you know, and I know he was getting pushed back on the language, but also I think they want to take time to consider the bill a little more fully. So, well, maybe.
Yeah, somebody asked me about commenting on this, and I think it was a National Post about this bill. And look, I said in my post, and I tagged him in it so he can see it, and he knows it. Representative Holt and I, you know, talk frequently, and so you know, I called him out as one of our most ferocious champions. I mean, the guy has always been, you know, leading. He's had some of the best remarks at some of our events at the Capitol. So, you know, I know he's on our side. So,
right.
But as I said to him in a text, you know, please bring this to a vote. Don't protect the people, because I know you're on our side, Steve.
Right.
Please don't protect the people who aren't. Please call this to a vote. So, you know, heck, the Democrats supported this bill in the Senate until they just tweaked the language. And tweaking the language didn't do anything to the bill.
I know you saw my interaction on Twitter about this with Laura Balin, who writes for Bleeding Heartland. And she's like, it's laying the groundwork to totally ban abortion. I'm like, well, that, you know, I'm thinking, great. But I'm like, you have way more confidence that this is going to happen than I do. I'm like, I hope you're right, you know?
We just need to, you know, again, it comes down to what good does it do for us to vote for Republicans if they're not going to at least uphold our main points in our platform? And, you know, I know it's probably been tweaked a little bit, but I helped write that life platform several years ago. It's infuriating. And again, this isn't even an anti-abortion bill. This is a way for you, if you're squishy, if you're a squishy Republican legislature out there and you happen to be listening to this, this is a way for you to get bonus points by not stopping one single abortion.
Right.
This would have protected women. This would have given women, you know, who are pregnant, who are in abusive relationships, another hammer to go after the person abusing them. And to watch you know, the lobbyists that are supposed to be protecting these women stand up there and go against a piece of legislation that makes it a Class A felony to harm, you know, the holy grail, right, of the left, the planned child, the wanted child.
Right.
You know, if they're going to make the arguments they're trying to make, then it shouldn't be a crime at all. They need to go in there and scrub the Class C felony out of there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to. Do you have any names we can name?
I don't.
You know, okay.
This is my gut, you know, and I haven't been, you know, to be frank, I haven't been at the Capitol as much this year. You know, I've been trying to, you know, do some stuff behind the scenes. I've got a full-time job also. You know, on the constitutional amendment. But, you know, until this bill popped up and kind of once I've figured out that the personhood bill was a cynical political ploy, you know, I just hadn't been down there. But probably what I can piece together is that just because I know, and I just typed this right before you called me, actually, just because I know sort of the unofficial mantra of the leadership in the Iowa House is protect the caucus at all costs, that my guess is there was pressure from on high that since they didn't have 51 votes out of the 54 Republicans, that they didn't want to see this bill brought to the floor.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, obviously, you know, decisions not to have a vote always on lands on leadership and
yep.
But unfortunately, it doesn't. On one hand, I understand if they're afraid it's going to set things back. But on the other hand, you know, being cynical, it is providing cover for people that we need to identify as those who are in desperate need of a primary challenge.
Right. Well, but again, if the party's job, again, back to my capital, the party, their job right. is to only elect Republicans. They don't care. They believe. In fact, I've heard it bounced around the walls that there's probably could be as many as 20 or more Republicans in the House that just would wish that the socialists would just go away.
Yeah, that's sad. That's sad.
I made a joking comment in a meeting the other day. Remember the good old days when Senator Gronstall was in charge and we had a conservative House?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Senate is conservative as it is, and I think it's definitely far more conservative than the House.
They
can't even get the Religious Freedom Restoration Act done.
Right. There's
some that just bow to the, you know, the pressure of the big business and what the
yep.
chamber says they do. And it's just appalling to me that big business, these organizations I consider frenemies, because I agree with them on a lot of fiscal issues and
yep.
and business issues. But when it comes to things like when they start meddling in education, when they start, you know, lobbying against bills like Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which doesn't allow discrimination. It all it does is provide an avenue of judicial review if a person feels that the government is denying their free exercise of religion.
Right. Well, isn't it not also the same bill that Bill Clinton signed?
Right.
Virtually identical.
Yeah, we had bipartisan agreement on this thing, overwhelming bipartisan agreement on this thing, you know, over 20 years ago. But now it's like they've bought in the lie that this is somehow discriminatory. And I've been harping on this. I wrote an article about it the other day, too, that people need to understand the difference between discrimination and exercising religious conscience as it deals with an event. People think that, you know, when they say, I don't want to bake a cake, for instance, because this is that, you know, that's the thing that seems
yeah.
to be in the courts a lot, bakers. I don't want to bake a wedding cake for the same-sex wedding ceremony. For some reason, somehow those people think, oh, that's the same as discriminating against me because of my identity. But a lot of those same bakers had LGBT customers already.
Most of those same people suing them were their customers for
right.
years,
right.
for over like, a decade in a couple cases.
Right. So it's like distinguish between identity and the event, you know, and it's like,
right.
it's not discrimination. It's just allowing people to exercise their religious conscience.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. Well, yeah. And look, they, you know, they want to wipe away all semblance of a Judeo-Christian ethic. You know, the foundation of the country, then you do what you want to do, you know, and then there's
yeah.
no, you know, and if you don't, do and approve of what I do, then you make me feel bad and you demean me and therefore you must be done away with.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, anything else for the good of the cause here that you want to talk about?
Really, I think just to maybe close up with, you know, we talked about the constitutional amendment, and I think we're going to be out around the state as much as we can talking about that. Circling back to something you just said a few minutes ago, we need to start figuring out who these folks are. And some of those we can probably go back and look at. you know, look, as you know, I wasn't a big proponent of the 20-week bill, but we can go look at any Republican that voted against it, unless, you know, they did it, and we know for sure that they did it because it didn't go far enough. But there are some folks. The only name that comes to mind that I think of right off the top of my head that voted against it's Republican is Maxwell, out of the Grinnell area. But you know, there's some other folks that will not, you know, just won't vote for our core issues, and so I think, you know, we're taking the constitutional amendment as a long game. I think we need to start looking at our representatives as a long game, because as we also know, is, you know, the only unforgivable sin, it seems like, with the party is if you're a hardcore conservative, where they won't have your back no matter what. So, you know, we may need to let a Democrat hold a seat for a couple of years, because it seems like it's a lot easier to run against a Democrat than it is to run against an incumbent Republican, because then you got to run against the whole party apparatus. So, yeah. You know, what we want to do is get out to, you know, these central committees and just get around to some groups around the summer. And, you know, we've got a lot of people now, for example, that are out seeing the movie Unplanned. And, and we're hearing from people who, what can we do? What can we do? Well, man, one of the things you can do is find out where your Republican central committee is and go find out if there's an open seat in your district. And go get put on that list. Just go to those meetings. Let's start filling the bench. Let's start getting some folks in there that you know, believe like we believe, and start pushing the party back to the right.
All right. Hey, Tim, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Shana. Talk to you soon.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Bye. Yeah, bye.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tim Overland. Now, this morning, I had a phone conversation with State Representative Skylar Wheeler. He is from Orange City. He's Republican. He represents Iowa House District 4. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Representative Wheeler.
Representative Wheeler, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us on the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, just this, your second session as a state legislator. What's your overall impressions about, you know, being in the Iowa legislature, in the Iowa House in particular?
You know, that's probably the biggest honor of my life. It is quite an amazing experience, but it's also very interesting because you can't learn any of this stuff in school. And I'm not talking about necessarily policy. I'm talking about the structure of it, the game, as I like to call it, because you're really playing a game half the time. You're
right
down there. You know, you've got to have somebody who understands policy, but also somebody who understands people and somebody who knows how to work with different types of people, and also somebody who I think is competitive. I personally, the more and more I do this, the more and more I think if you weren't competitive, like in an athletic competition in high school or something like that, you're going to struggle in this game because you are competing. You're competing for votes. You're competing for good legislation. You're competing against the media and all these different things. But really, like I said, it's an honor. It's interesting. It's frustrating. There's a lot of words to describe it. but I am thankful to my constituents for giving me the opportunity to be down there.
And what are you hearing from your, I assume you're holding, you know, meetings on weekends and meeting with constituents. What are the impressions they're giving you as far as the job the legislature's doing?
You know, on a personal level, I think that my constituents are pretty happy with me. I mean, I've got a great district. I have a very conservative district. It fits my personal values very well. I don't have to go outside of my personal beliefs. I can vote basically my conscience all day long down there, and my people are with me and understand. As far as the legislature this year, there's disappointment. Obviously, my constituents are disappointed in some of our lack, you know, our areas that we're lacking in getting things done. They seem to be a little more happy with the Senate, and I don't blame them. And when they compare to the previous General Assembly, you know, I just heard it from a guy the other day. You guys were fantastic the last 2 years. What in the heck happened this year? So there's good little wins, and I try and highlight those wins as best as I can in my newsletter and on social media. But pales in comparison to what we did the previous General Assembly.
Right. So when you I guess this session, what are some of the things that you personally have been working on?
Yeah, so I filed a number of different pieces of legislation, some that came to me from constituents, some that came from legislators that didn't make it back that I had promised that I would work on that I thought were good. We were able to get a few bills passed. One allows parents, so if you have two or more children at the same grade level academically in elementary school, you can request that they be in the same class or request they be in separate classes if the school can have more than one class at that grade level. I think that was a win for parents. We were able to get it through the House, and I know this last week the Senate got it through the Education Committee, so it's still alive, and I anticipate it getting through. Small win, but a nice little win for parents that are faced with that unique circumstance. And then we also passed a bill that I was able to file that we got through that Ashley Henson had ran, because I'm not on judiciary, that allows child victims to testify in a pretrial deposition without having the defense attorney and the defendant in the room. Obviously, this could be traumatic if you're a 13-year-old kid who was just sexually molested by some person, and you have to sit across the table from them before the trial even gets going to give your testimony. Now you can give it, and it can either be live streamed in the other room, or I believe possibly recorded on tape, which was kind of in response to an issue that had happened in my district where a teacher at one of the Christian schools up here sexually molested a bunch of fifth grade boys. And I'm not going to get into all that, but it was a very hard thing on our community, and specifically those young kids. So those were kind of two easy ones. I've tried, every year I've been down there, we've tried something on Common Core and we've been unsuccessful. We've taken a look at school choice legislation in the House, and our biggest champion, Walt Rogers, is gone. And I knew the minute he lost that issue was probably dead in the House for a while. We filed pro-gun legislation, and the only thing we got through was the constitutional amendment on gun rights.
Which is no small thing. Unfortunately, it could have been the second time. I mean, this could have been going the voters, like, you know, in 2020 had that mess up by the Iowa Secretary of State's office not happened. So,
that was disappointing. So, the issues that drive me home are no secret. I filed a bill to get rid of the income tax. It raises the sales tax some because, I can't crash and burn the whole budget. They're not going to take that up, but they're not going to take this up either. Co-sponsored bill to get rid of the inheritance tax. But a lot of my work comes in, it really comes in heavy lifting on the Education Committee for trying to do anything I can to get rid of regulations or, you know, to give parents choice and power in schooling. And then also I sit on Ways and Means this year, so I try and vote against any stupid tax increases or fee increases that I don't think are necessary. Sometimes you might have a fee that hasn't been raised in 40 years. I can understand that argument. But if you've got a new tax coming in, this hotel motel tax, this last week I voted against, it felt great. Just a stupid, in my opinion, a money grab on extending the amount of time somebody has to stay to not have to pay the sales tax, and then not even reimbursing them on this bill, which to me is just a total money grab. So that's where a lot of the work has been. But my personal stuff, you know, I file similar bills every year. And I just don't think I've got the conservatives in the House to pass these types of things.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, regarding your work on the Education Committee, there was a bill that unfortunately stalled that was passed in the Senate. It was the Education Deregulation Bill that basically returned local control to local school districts in a variety of different ways. Any insight into why that stalled out this year and didn't survive the second funnel?
Sure. So that was a bill I was actually assigned to run, which was awesome. When Chairman Dolichek came to me and said, I think you'd be good to run this bill, I took a look at the bill. It was about 11.5-page bill, and I would say 6 of the 11.5 pages were just cutting things out of code. They were cutting mandates and regulations, and I just looked at them. I said, this is literally why I run for office. These are the kind of bills that get me fired up, and I sit there, you know, I start studying this nearly 12-page bill. We held a subcommittee on the bill, and I was able to get it out on a 3-2 vote with the two Democrats on the subcommittee going absolutely nuts. And we sat there for about an hour and listened to people talk about how this bill was horrible and how kids were going to die and all these different crazy, ridiculous things that they were saying.
Yeah.
And the bill, the issues came, and they're no secret, the issues were pretty simple. You had some legislators that did not want the Department of Public Health to collect the data because it centralized the data. I understand
right.
that argument. That was my one issue with the bill. Then you had a set of people that were convinced that if we did this, it was going to get rid of screening and the vision screening and the dental screening and the blood lead testing. And let me personally tell you this, and I've been open about this. I don't know why it's the government's business or the school's business to even have any of that information or to require any of those things.
Right.
I think those in general should be gone, period. I think that's absolutely terrible. So I told them, I said, okay, then let's just get rid of it altogether. Well, then, you know, the sky fell. So there were issues there. And so basically the only way it could get out of education was to strip that part of the bill.
Right.
When they said they wanted to strip that part of the bill, even though there were some other regulations in there to cut, I was pretty angry. And I basically told them, I said, well, if you're going to gut the main part of this bill, then I'm not running it. I said, either we are going to do this right or we're not going to do it. And you're gonna, you know, we're going to come back and now we're going to file to get rid of these freaking screenings. So I was enraged. I mean, I thought this was a no-brainer. This was something the school boards wanted, the school advocates wanted, and the school administrators wanted. And because of a bunch of interest groups, literally the ones that fought this bill were your, all of them had an interest in doing these screenings for whatever it was, financial gain or something along those lines.
Right.
We couldn't pull our heads out and go ahead and just say, screw it, we'll fight the Democrats for 8 hours on this and pass it and get rid of these regulations.
Does it seem like there's just not a lot of fight with the House Republican caucus this year?
I would actually say it's all together with the House, period. There have been bills that I thought the Democrats were going to go absolutely nuts over, and they've been a lot less. I mean, there's been less of them talking and less of them going nuts. And on the House side, I mean, it's either these guys are exhausted or they're scared or something. But they're, I think you're 100%. I think it's the House in general. There's the fight is not there from what you saw the last 2 years, but especially on the Republican side. I mean, it's, you know, I'm beating my head against the wall half the time I'm down there going, why in the heck am I driving 4 hours down and 4 hours back, you know, every fourth day, whatever it is that I have to do it, to go down there to basically get peanuts to come back to the district and say, hey, you're paying me money to go down there and beat my head against the wall and sit here and vote on, you know, a bill that changes a word. I mean,
yeah,
I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I'm fearful that, well, we can get into what I think the referee, you know, what this is going to cost for us not doing these things. But I think people are looking at this the wrong way, thinking that if we do less, maybe it won't be as bad in the next election. And I disagree. If we do less, it's going to cost us.
Right. Right. It just occurred to me as we were talking, I erroneously said that this was your second session. This is actually your third.
Yep.
I forgot we had a little election, you know, 2018, you were reelected.
Yep.
Time flies. Holy cow. I think one of the disappointments for me this session is that it seems like on the life issue, we've you know hit a brick wall. The life amendment just that you know is an advantage. Obviously, I don't think it has gone anywhere in the House, but it hit a brick wall in the Senate, which surprised me. Any thoughts on the life issue in the legislature?
You know, I'm not as concerned about the life amendment at this time because you got to remember we can still pass. It's just got to pass in this general assembly, right?
So true. Yes.
I told some people, we had this conversation. I said there's no reason to go ahead and have this fight at this moment. We've got next year. Number one. Number two. There are groups, specifically the Family Leader and some others, that are going to work on some different things. We want to make sure we've got the wording right because even in my own district, I've had people reach out and say, well, what in the world are you guys, you know, what's the reason for the neutrality thing? Go life at conception. And I just, you know, my easiest response is to say, look, if we didn't get it last year, which I'm going to tell you and be honest with you, Shane, I don't think you'll ever find a conservative general assembly like you had last year in Iowa ever again. I don't think it'll ever happen. I look back at that and say how, you know, I look now and I look back and I say that we were so lucky. I was so lucky to have those guys in the House. I mean, it was frustrating, but it wasn't even close to what I'm dealing with right now. I would give anything to have that back. But we have to explain to these guys what the Supreme Court did with their decision last July was they tried to find a right in the state constitution for an abortion. So if we can't get life at conception through, our next best bet to keep the life issue afloat in the state of Iowa is to solidify in the state constitution that there is not a right to an abortion. Now, what we're going to be faced with is we're going to be faced with Planned Parenthood and the ACLU and everybody else saying, well, that's actually, you know, that's advocating for life being at conception to say there's no right to an abortion in the state constitution. However, I don't believe that's true.
No, it's just plainly saying what the Constitution doesn't say.
Exactly.
I was amazed at the legal gymnastics the Iowa Supreme Court went through, the majority that struck down the 72-hour waiting period on finding a right to abortion in the Constitution. I read the clauses in the Iowa Constitution they cited. It's like, yep, it's not in there. What in the world? I had an early conversation with Tim Overland. He's for this particular podcast episode as well. He mentioned it. I remember reading in the Minority Dissent that the founders, the people who wrote the Iowa Constitution, later crafted anti-abortion bills. Just months after the Iowa Constitution was ratified. So, obviously, those who are advocating a right to abortion in the Iowa Constitution, there's no commitment to textualism or originalism when they came to that decision. This is totally reinterpreting the Constitution to say something it doesn't say.
Yep. Yeah, so the biggest thing on the life amendment that I'll say if you're somebody that's kind of an all or nothing person, you've got to be on board with this if we put this on the ballot. Because what's going to happen is if this thing fails, if this goes to a vote of the people by 2022 and it fails, the life issue is done in the state of Iowa, probably even for my lifetime. I think that'll be – Planned Parenthood will rack that up as a massive win. The court will have won, essentially, and will say, hey, look, we found a right to an abortion even though it's not in there. And the people of Iowa agree, and we're going to be done. So we've got to make sure when this goes on the ballot, people understand why this is going to the ballot. They understand what the ramifications of this are if they don't turn out to vote.
Right.
And they understand if we do win, you better believe you're going to probably see a resurgent, another effort to go after life at conception or something like that in the state of Iowa. Yeah, this would be a massive pro-life win. But if it gets beat, oh my goodness, I think we are in huge trouble on the life issue in the state of Iowa.
I agree. And I'm not sure if it's – I think it might be better if it's, 20 right now, even if it passes next year and then the next General Assembly, we're looking at 2022.
Yep.
And I'm thinking that might be a better year to do it, a midterm election rather than a presidential election. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I'm thinking that could end up firing up the conservative pro-life base and we might have better turnout.
Well, not only that, but this could have been a blessing in disguise, too. What happened with the gun bill and Paul Pate actually might work in our advantage, because if you think about it, if we're able to pass the life amendment next year, and in the next General Assembly we pass the gun amendment and the life amendment, those two go on the ballot at the same time, and there is nothing better to fire up grassroots conservative voters than guns and babies, and I think that is an outstanding opportunity. I've told the Iowa Firearms Coalition, the family leader, I said, if that happens, we've got to all work together, because I don't know anybody that's super pro-gun that's not pro-life. And it's very rare do you find somebody that loves defending and protecting unborn babies that doesn't like having guns. So those two go together very well. You better believe the NRA and some of those groups are going to be hard. They're going to be working in Iowa like crazy.
Right.
And I think we would be raising a lot of money on the life issue. I think we run those two together and fire up the Republican base. And, of course, it might do the opposite. The left is going to come out and vote, too.
Right.
But they're, they're going to come out angry and voting no, as opposed to these people who are going to be excited. And we're going to say, hey, if we win on these two issues, Iowa's about to become, the beacon of conservatism in the United States of America if we get these things through. So
right.
I think that could be a – I think that's our best bet, have those two together in 2022, midterm election. you know, with Reynolds on the ballot and fire everybody up and say, let's go. Oh, and you're going to have an open seat likely for Senator Grassley's seat. So, I mean, that's just going to be a that could be a massive election.
Oh, so you're breaking news here? I haven't heard him saying he's going to retire. You think he's going to retire?
That's my personal nobody's telling me that, and he's not going to tell anybody for a while either. That's my personal guess. I think everybody's assuming it.
I'd be shocked if he decided to run again. So yeah, it'll be interesting. So, also just, judicial reform. Or judicial nomination reform. That's still on the radar that survived the funnel. Have you heard anything about when a vote's going to take place or debate?
Sure. So it definitely survived the funnel. The Senate had passed it out, I think, on a party line vote. Every Republican voted for it in the Senate. And on the House side, it passed out of the Judiciary Committee, I think with one vote to spare, and we had Andy McKean, who's a Republican, on our side that voted against it in committee. That is probably the number one thing that has been the most frustrating to see. That is a no-brainer for Republicans. That is an absolute no-brainer, and really for Democrats. If you look at it, it gives a fair system, right? So basically, the Republicans in the legislature will have four picks, and the Democrats in the legislature will have four picks, and then it basically comes down to whoever the governor is going to flip it one way or the other. That's what we can do without amending the Constitution, right? If we want to go further than that, we've got to amend the Constitution.
Right. But well, even half of the picks for the commission still are going to be lawyers. It's just not.
Yep.
It just removes the decision out of the Iowa bar's hand.
Yep. Yeah, we probably could have went further with this too, but the thing that's been most amazing to me is that, there's been a group out, well, there's several groups out there, but what they've done is they've contacted our constituents and said, hey, these scumbag Republicans are trying to corrupt our courts and make them crazy right-wing extremists, yada, yada, yada. You know, tell these guys to keep our courts fair. And I've had a few conservatives in my district that have contacted me about this, and I wrote them back and I said, you know, I can understand that you guys look at this and say, well, yeah, we don't want to totally just make the courts one way or the other. I said, but our court is extremely left. I said, so they're lying when they say keep the courts fair. If you're a communist, the court is probably fair right now. Or a Marxist, then you probably love these courts.
If you're somebody we got a Supreme Court that found a right to, you know, sex reassignment surgery. So
your tax dollars are going to go to that. Your tax dollars are going to go to that. And I just told these guys, I said, but that just shows kind of what we've dealt with, right? They're going to, it's not just lefty constituents. I've had good, solid conservatives. Once I explain this to them, they go, oh, wow, I am so sorry, you know, go get them, Skyler, kind of a thing. But unfortunately, there's legislators that aren't like me who are willing to kind of go after their own constituents if they think they're wrong. They might just take a look at it and start racking up the tally and say, oh, I've got all these constituents telling me not to change anything. Once you explain this issue to people and you explain the list of 15 outrageous rulings that our Supreme Court has had in the last decade or so, where they have just gone total lefty, people start to go, okay, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So, but as Republicans, and this is what I've tried to get across to some of my colleagues that are struggling with this, this is an absolute no-brainer. There is no point for us to do our job if we can't figure out how to rein in the judiciary. If they're just going to sit there and throw crap out all the time or make up stuff as they go, what's the point of you having this job? They're doing our job. Basically, they're doing our job because we don't know how to rein them in. And unfortunately, I think some of these guys don't quite understand that that is also the role of the legislature too, is to keep, you know, they check us, the judiciary checks us, we're supposed to check them as well.
Right. And people don't realize, I mean, really, when you read the Iowa Constitution, the legislature is supposed to be the strongest branch.
Yep.
So, yep. But you have a judiciary that wants to, you know, be oligarchs. So, anything else happened in this session that you want to mention before we let you go?
Well, I'll just touch on a couple things. You know, it's been frustrating, but one of the big wins that we couldn't get in the last 2 years, what we got this year was the campus free speech bill. That is probably going to be the best bill we get, I think, this General Assembly. I think it has huge ramifications for what's been going on in our college campuses. I've been trying very hard on this issue, you know, the issue of the liberalism taking place at, especially at the University of Iowa, that you've got, you know, a decent amount going on at Iowa State. I've been trying to push that to my colleagues and say, look, there's got to be a way for us to start going after that kind of stuff. Those are public universities. You know, there are some things that happen on private college campuses that, you know, make conservatives go, what in the heck? But as a legislator, it's none of my business. Those guys, if they want to teach atheism and they want to be a private college and teach, you know, atheism and evolutionism and communism and all this crap, as a legislator, my personal job is to ensure that we don't put burdens on them. I don't want us messing with them, even if I don't like what they're teaching. But if you're going to be a public university where we're going to be giving you literally unbelievable amounts of money, you better believe we should be able to come in there and say, hey, quit teaching these kids that freaking, you know, that Sweden and Denmark and all these places are the greatest places on earth to live, when in fact they're becoming bankrupt and have all sorts of different issues going on right now. And then, you know, they attack our founders for being racist and all these different things that I've heard from college kids that go to Iowa and Iowa State. So campus free speech is a big win, but there's more we've got to do to combat the liberalism going on at those two colleges.
Right. Well, at the very least, I mean, I'm not sure I'm entirely with you as far as when it comes to, I want free expression, but that also means conservative professors should be able to have free expression as well. But, you know, at the very least, respect free speech, respect the right to assembly, respect, Christian groups and Muslim groups and other groups to be able to select leadership that reflects what they believe, and not have the university tell them, no, that's not okay because it doesn't fit with our particular, you know, policy. I think that was a great way to go. And it was mind boggling to me to see Democratic opposition to the bill because of that addition of, you know, not the universities not being able to tell student groups, you know, who their leaders can be and who they can't be. So,
And that bill only, so my point being that bill only deals with public,
institutions
of higher education. There was talk about going after the accredited, you know, the private colleges. And obviously I've got Dorton Northwestern. I want them to be as conservative and as Christian as possible up here. I want them to not put burdens on students and whatnot. However, I also don't want the government to come in and start telling them what they can and can't do with different things, because that's going to create all sorts of issues. Same thing with the private high schools. I don't like when we have bills that attach a requirement to them that also, I absolutely can't stand it. I want us to stay as far away, even if I don't like what's going on there, because I know what can happen if Republicans aren't in control and we're going to start throwing mandates on private institutions. It's going to get real ugly and real nasty, and there's not going to be no point for them. So I did fight to ensure that it was only the public ones. And really, the private higher institution, they don't really get anything from us. There's the Iowa tuition grant, but those really go to the students. To me, that's kind of a higher education voucher, as well, which I am very supportive of, because I think students, especially if their parents are Iowa taxpayers, should be able to get some help if they want to go to a private school. I don't have any problem with that.
Right.
So.
Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, Shane.
All right. Hey, take care.
Yep.
Bye. Bye.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please be sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com. Or you could just Google Caffeinated Thoughts and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for emails. That way you don't miss a single update. You can also catch us on your favorite podcast app, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and whom else? I'm missing somebody. No, maybe not. Well, anyway, if we're missing somebody, let us know. Drop me a line, Shane at caffeinatedthoughts.com, and we'll see if we can get on that on that app as well. So thank you so much for listening. This is Shane Vanderhart. Have an excellent weekend. Take care.